Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Dr. Howard Rankin, and welcome to The Miracle Within You, the show at the intersection of psychology, medicine, and spirituality that considers how the mind and body interact with each other to influence health and healing. With years of experience as a practicing psychologist in the health and wellness fields, and as a writer covering amazing stories of healing, I will explore with my guests how numerous factors influence our lives and our health. Thank you for listening. Welcome to The Miracle Within You. I'm Dr. Howard Rankin, and today I'm delighted to have with me Marissa Afton, who is an expert in organizational well-being. And what we will be talking about today are the sort of miracles that happen or can happen within organizations. This is very important. Organizations obviously vary in size, but they can be affect, and obviously hundreds and hundreds, if not more, people. So organizations also have a mindset. They also have outcomes, obviously, and the two are related, as we'll see. So great to have you with us, Marissa.
Oh, Howard, I'm so honored to be here with you. And I love bringing the idea of miracles within organizations and looking at their mindsets.
Yes, that's great. Only question so that our listeners can get to know you. Just give us a little bit of background about your own personal trajectory here and how you get to be doing what you're doing today.
Yeah, thank you. So just in kind of very formal terms, I am a partner at Potential Project. We're a global research and leadership development firm. My trajectory getting to Potential Project really goes back to childhood. So my father himself, he was a lawyer, he was an attorney, and he was also general counsel at an international global firm many, many decades ago.
Wow.
And it was a high pressure job. I grew up in New York City, and he was in this very always on culture. And I recognize that always on in the 1970s and 80s is not quite what we're talking about today. But I remember that he would work a lot of nights and he would work a lot of weekends. And there was a lot of his own trying to find balance within himself. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that he found balance within in himself, and what I witnessed as a child growing up with him, is he found mindfulness and he found meditation.
Wow.
And this was something that was a bit fringe back then. And
he kind
of had to be secretive about it. He couldn't really bring it into the open, even though he felt very passionately that, you know, people would have so much better balance with that ability to like be balanced with themselves. So
yeah, that is incredible. I mean, we know how valuable that is today, but back then, unless you lived in Japan probably or China, certainly in the Western world, it was pretty woo-woo or minimal for sure. So that was fantastically insightful of him.
Yes. And he was an explorer and he was very curious and he was looking for answers. And so I was witnessing it, but I thought it was a little fringe and woo-woo. I mean, here I was and I was, you know, growing up and trying to be cool and doing meditation and mindfulness felt like the weird thing that my father did.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to a point in my life where I also recognized that my life was out of balance and that maybe some of those wisdom techniques that my father had relied on for so many years could have benefit for me as well. So that led me on a bit of a personal journey for myself. It led me to my advanced degree in understanding the psychology of human behavior while I was also practicing my own mindfulness and meditation. And then I went into organizational psychology and I've worked at different consulting firms over the years until I landed with Potential Project about 10 years ago, which for me has been the best of both. It's research back, but we are also very inspired by core wisdom traditions with a mission to create a more human world of work.
No, that's great. And talking about our Father's Day back in the day, organizations and leadership was quite a different thing then, right? It was pretty authoritarian. You do what the boss tells you. You shut up. You don't make waves,
Very top
etc. etc.
down.
Yeah, very, very, quite different from the way it is today or should be, right?
And what I would say is, as you said, or should be, I think it when we're looking at what the potential is, and it's by design that our organization is Potential Project. We're looking at every engagement that we do with every company that we work with as a project that is really enhancing the potential of that organization as a system in and of itself. But not all organizations are there. And why are they not there? Well, because organizations are built of humans, and humans can be fallible and messy and sometimes don't have the right mindset. And so part of our role is to kind of put them back on that pathway to have more mindful cultures.
And we talk a lot on this program about individual mindsets, but at an organizational level, when there are more people involved and people with equity and power and status within it, that becomes
An
a little.
ego.
Oh yes, don't let's not forget ego. How could I forget ego? Then it becomes a little more complicated, I would think, and that's a challenge.
It can be, but what I also know is there's the flip side of human behavior. So we can be ego-driven, we can be power, there can be power dynamics. But we also ultimately, and I'm sure you know this so well from your own work, we want to be connected. We want to have positive experiences. Ultimately, we spend so much time at work, more time generally than we do doing the things we love with the people we love. And why not have those spaces be really positive spaces where we can show up as our whole selves, where we can really innovate and collaborate in spaces where there's high trust and as well as high accountability. And so that's a lot of what we try to inspire leaders and companies to do.
Yes, absolutely. And there's a really interesting David Dawkins, who was into this sort of vibrational energy you may be familiar with. He created a very good table of consciousness, looking at different levels of energy, from high levels of energy all the way down. The highest levels were, the sort of spirituality, compassion, love, all of those wonderful things. And then as you get to the lower half of the table, it was frustration, stress, anger, and right at the bottom, shame, which makes sense. And we have, I talk a lot about the world being divided somewhat, albeit artificially, because there's overlap between doing and being, right? But we can be in a state of doing and a state of being. And an organization, inherently, it's about, well, we got to get these things done. But then there's the being part of it, which gives the doing the meaning, right? If you don't see the
Absolutely.
meaning of what you're doing, it's
There's no
not going to,
purpose.
right? Right.
There's no purpose. And yet, Howard, what I love about what you're saying, and I think the unlock for a lot of companies today is that the doing feels like it's active, right? There's this whole thing, is activity equaling productivity? But in the absence of activity, we just add more and more and more action and doing rather than allowing and being. And yet, whether we're looking at it from a wisdom tradition perspective, contemplative practices, or we're looking at it just from the neuroscience, we know the best innovations come from a state of being. The best ability to really understand and resonate with another person, which means that you're going to collaborate better, comes from a state of being. We don't get our best ideas just from trying to force them by doing. So
Correct.
that balance, as you said, is so key.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I love the stories of discoverers that were initiated in that mindset, where they weren't focused on the problem.
Right.
My favorite example is Einstein sitting under a tree one day, and the sunlight was piercing through the clouds. Sometimes that sunbeam looks like a real beam. And he was looking at it and he asked himself this question: I wonder what it would be like to ride on that sunbeam. And that was the basis of the theory of relativity. He wasn't in his lab writing equations on the board. That would come later. He was just sitting in nature.
Moments of insight do not happen in front of the computer terminal, in front of the chalkboard. They happen under the tree, in the shower, right? When your mind is relaxed and you can simply be present.
Yes. And in your work in organizations, that does seem to me, but you're the one who's been working in them, that idea has certainly seemed to be, from a sort of outsider, much more acceptable and accepting in organizations today. Is that a fair comment?
I would say more and more so, and even in the 10 years I've been with Potential Project and say the 20 years that I've been in organizations, more and more so, certainly. And even when I started with Potential Project 10 years ago, and a lot of what we were doing with leaders and teams then was mindfulness in organizations, there were only some companies who were really willing to invest their money and their resources, their people, to take time out to give space to their mind. And yet we now see that it's had a huge wave of acceptance. And then there's still companies who are maybe more old school. And then it's evolved from there. And you mentioned compassion earlier. Compassion and empathetic leadership has also had a lot of focus in organizations right now, which we really love because honestly, if you can bring compassion into the workplace, then you're right there, right? You're right there with being able to really support people. And support people not just from the perspective of being nice, because that's only one piece of compassion. It's really how are we benefiting our people so that ultimately we can actually still benefit the bottom line, because our people are part of our ability to manage whatever it is our objective is.
So, being compassionate, nice, kind, well, I don't like the word nice, but respectful, impacts the bottom line positively, right?
Exactly.
If your employees just love working for you, I mean, you're going to get the most out of them, they're going to get the most out of you. And that's the challenge, I think, is creating that mindset, right?
One of the ways that we've found that's an entry point for any skeptics is the data, and you already mentioned it. I mean, you probably intuit it if you don't know that there's actual research that backs people who feel a sense of psychological safety, a sense of trustworthiness, if they feel that their leader is there for them, is looking out for them, sees them as a whole human being, is more compassionate and wants to be a benefit, The impact on people is their stress levels go down, their engagement goes up, their willingness to follow their leader goes up, their willingness to stay and retain their role in the company goes way up. So there's all kinds of positive bottom line impacts as well as positive human impacts when we're bringing compassion to the table in organizations.
And the productivity, of course, also
And the
goes up.
productivity, very much so.
Yes. This is great. I'm talking to Marissa Afton, who is an expert in organizational well-being, and we're talking about the importance of mindset in organizations as well as individuals. We'll continue more with this fascinating conversation right after this short break from our wonderful sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to The Miracle Within You. Today I'm talking with Marissa Afton. We're talking about miracles in organizations. And Marissa works for a potential project which helps organizations manifest these great qualities that allow for amazing things to happen. I'm sure, Marissa, you've got all sorts of experiences and stories working in this field, perhaps not just with potential project over the last decade, but others where you have seen both sides of the story, where perhaps somebody or an organization has refused and dismissed this notion that, now they're just working for us, they get paid, they should do what we tell them, to this more engagement. What has struck you from that?
I have two stories that come to mind, and one is, as you mentioned, from my pre-potential project days, kind of my entry-level job as a beginning consultant. I was working for I was focused on organizational health, safety, and well-being, and my primary focus was in heavy industries. And with heavy industries, I was going to mining sites, construction sites, oil and gas fields, anywhere where life or limb could be at stake. And part of my role was to help shift the mindset specifically around safety and how do we approach safety differently, not from just a standard operating procedure or how we're using a piece of equipment, but how we're using our mind, the operating equipment in our own minds. And, very often I would be faced with some, dare I say, rough and tumble folk who maybe they have four generations in the mining industry and they're coming in and they're like, what is this girl going to tell me about how to stay safe? And yet I would go and with all wonderful intentions, start sharing some concepts about how they can think about their own safety from the perspective of their own mind. And, usually at the beginning, there might be a little bit of a lean back. And then maybe if I was having a good day, they might lean forward. But some of the most powerful experiences I had were less about how people showed up differently at work, but how they showed up differently to their families as a result of understanding their own mindset and the mindsets that impact how they are interacting with the people they love most. And as a really powerful example, I can recall working with a group where between days one and day two, I had a gentleman come up to me and he said, I came in, I was kind of skeptical. I didn't know what all this brain stuff you'd be talking about us was had to do with anything. But you said something that really stuck with me, and it was about choice, and that I have a choice about how I show up for myself in work and outside of work. And I went home yesterday, and instead of ignoring my kid when he was telling me the same story about his day and just going and doing my own thing, I realized I have a choice. And for him to have that realization after just one day of
Wow.
talking ostensibly about safety, but
Yes.
from the perspective of mindset, I just, it moved me because of how much it moved him.
Yep.
And there's so many stories that I have like that where people made the association not only to what they were doing in the job, but outside of the job as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
that's one powerful story
No,
that's
and
come
that's
to
really a good point too, because what you talk about in terms of, meaning and understanding and all of that doesn't just apply in the organization, of course. That may be where they are, the context in which they are encountering this concept, but that's a great story about how somebody adapted it
yes.
in other areas of their life, in this case with his family. Yeah. That's great because people don't think about this stuff unless they have to or unless they're
Yes.
confronted with it, right? They just
Correct.
don't.
And I gave him so much credit for having that own light bulb, his own light bulb moment that he could then associate that hopefully had long reaching, far reaching positive impact on his relationship with his son. You know, this is over a decade ago now.
Right. Yeah.
And
Yeah.
so I love that. That's as one example. Another example I can share, which is more recent, maybe fast forward to, you know, the work that I'm doing now at Potential Project and working with many senior leaders and many global organizations. And I was brought in about 2022 to a global pharmaceutical company where one of their operations leaders was really looking at how do we help people to feel more engaged and more supportive, especially coming out of the pandemic and also really growing at a very fast rate in the company. And so we introduced some of our concepts around compassionate leadership, or essentially how to do hard things in a human way. And we worked together with their teams to create different learning experiences and different language that they can use internally to help support leaders and supporting people. And fast forward a few years, and I still hear stories about how this leader shows up differently when this leader maybe in the past had shown up to a site at a manufacturing plant and maybe had a little bit more of a kind of like show me, prove me mentality. Now comes in and people are no longer kind of nervous, like, oh my goodness, now, you know, it's going to be a site visit day. Now they come in, and when he's showing up, they're so excited to talk with him and collaborate with him because of how he's showing up differently. And that, again, has long-standing, far-reaching impact for how people show up and how they perform.
Yeah, that's a lovely example too, because now he shows up differently, they see him differently, and it probably increases his influence exponentially.
And
You
his
know.
respect and the followership, and he really has a servant leadership mentality that makes such a difference in terms of how people just want to embrace the vision that he has.
Yeah, and that's what it's about. And, sometimes it may seem, certainly perhaps in years past, certainly may seem paradoxical that, getting to know your people and being nice to them and really engaging with them would influence productivity. I mean, people would say, well, then they just take you for granted and they're not going to work any harder. No, it doesn't work like that. It does not work like that. If you've established a bridge between somebody and you respect each other and you care about each other,
Exactly.
game changer, miracle,
Miracle. And
miracle.
the miracle is really understanding the internal motivations of human behavior. And going back to what we started with earlier in the first segment, it's a lot of motivation. It may seem when we're under threat or we feel judged, we get defensive, the ego comes up. But deep down, all of us want to be seen. We want harmony. We want connection. And when we have that in organizations, miracles do happen.
Yeah. And really what it is, you know, we're looking at that from a neurological perspective, it's getting away from the primitive brain, you know, and
Exactly.
moving into the neocortex, the brain that's developed above the primitive brain. And the primitive brain is about survival and fighting and stress and all of that. And that may have been good a few thousand years ago. It's not, should not be primary today, right?
Exactly.
And we should have evolved to understand that and understand, you know, the primitive emotions aren't helpful unless you're in a war or, you know, and even then they may not be helpful either. But we have to understand that, not just assume, well, that's how I feel and it must be right. No. And it comes back to emotional intelligence. Understanding that and controlling that. Massive lessons, which this is interesting little tangent. None of that's really taught in schools or in education, is it?
I mean, I'm sure that there are some schools that are kind of boutique schools who have really focused in on that. And I, you know, in my way, way back early pre-consulting years, I was a teacher within the Krishnamurti Foundation system. And that was a school that was trying to teach emotional intelligence at a very young age. But that's a unique circumstance. And I think what it really comes down to, though, is are we curious about each other? Are we curious about, well, what is it that's creating this reaction from Howard? What am I, what have I triggered? What's it, how is it impacting me? Rather than doubling down on my view, my perspective, my way, which is the more primitive, response.
No, absolutely. And you know, I call that open-mindedness sort of quantum thinking, which is, look, what you look at is determined by who's looking at it, right? And so, and the lens you're wearing when you're looking at it. So, hey, try changing the lens every now and again and see something for different than what seems obvious. What seems obvious, and the big, you know, the. If anyone said, what's the single piece of advice you would have for anybody right now, it would be when bad things, even terrible things, happen to you, ask yourself this question. If this were the best thing that ever happened to me, what would I need to do? Right? You frame it that way, changes the mindset. I've been through that experience. Changes the mindset sets you on a completely different path and really allows you then instead of get bogged down in negative emotions and victimhood, frees you up to
See
manifest
possibility.
everything, right?
It's even asking the question allows for a different perspective of possibility and hope as opposed to just challenge and shutting the brain down to anything that's possible.
No, and I think that is part, that's part of the miracle mindset. I really do think that is essential for seeing things in that way, which is a leap because that seems counterintuitive. What do you mean? This horrible thing has just happened to me. How could it be the best thing? Well, you can make it that, you know, you can make it that.
One of the things that I also like to do is recognize that two truths can be equally true, right? So it
Correct.
can, it's when nobody's saying it's not a horrible thing.
Absolutely.
It can be a horrible thing, and you can look at it as, well, what's the possibility of this horrible thing that can be made different?
Exactly. You're not denying it's horrible. You're not denying terrible things happen. No, you're not denying that. But you are looking at the future and saying, how do I make something positive out of this? Right.
Exactly.
What do I learn from this? What can I learn? That mindset takes you down a different path.
It gives you your authority back.
Yes, it gives you power back. It really does when you're feeling powerless. And I'm sure that applies to organizations as much as it does to individuals. That,
It
you know,
certainly
they hit
does.
hard times, they've got to pull together and move forward in an energetic, you know, positive way so they can find the right solutions.
Many organizations are going through huge transformation right now across any number of levels that you can possibly think of. One of the ways that we frame it back to them is to consider it as a type of realistic optimism. And it's not the optimism that's just the rose-colored
No,
glasses,
no,
that kind of
no.
naive optimism that's just hopeful but not action-oriented.
Right.
Realistic optimism says it, sometimes our options are between crap and super crap, but if those are our only options, then what's the action that we're going to take?
No, exactly. And you just note that I didn't say if something horrible happens to you, you say, oh, this is the best thing. No, I said, how do
Right.
you make it the best
Exactly.
thing? Right? That is important where you have that mindset of action. And yeah, again, it isn't a sort of silly positiveness. So I'm just going to smile, it'll be okay. No, life is, you know, is about adaptability and adaptation, right?
Exactly.
And if you find that path and embrace it with the right energy, then amazing things can happen. This is awesome, Marissa. We'll have to take one last break to hear from our sponsors, but then we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Miracle Within You today. I'm delighted to be talking to Marissa Afton. We're talking about organizational well-being and the miracles that occur in organizations when they are able to take on the right mindset, which we have been talking about. And Marissa, what are some of the tools that I'm sure it varies, obviously, from organization to organization, but are there sort of a general tools that you use to try to inspire people to perceive their situation and what they need to do appropriately?
It's again interesting times because we have so many tools out there right now. And I think that the tool that's kind of most forefront in many organizations and all realities is artificial intelligence. And of course, artificial intelligence has been around for decades and decades and decades. And if you think you haven't been using artificial intelligence, let me tell you have, because your news feed is based on artificial intelligence, and a lot of the choices with your GPS is based on artificial intelligence. But of course, artificial intelligence is something that's coming core into organizations for many, many good and positive reasons. So that's a tool. It's a tool that's based on, it's a machine-based tool, if you will. But because we're so mindset focused in potential project, we really look at what's the best of both, what's the best of mind plus machine to get the best out of both of these amazing operating systems. And so maybe I can just take a step back and talk about, as we look first and foremost, we are a research firm. We're a research firm that focuses on the impact of leaders on people and on the minds of people. And when we're looking at that operating system of the mind, we look at it from three different levels. We look at the perceiving capacity of the mind, like what we perceive moment by moment. Then we look at the discerning capacity of the mind. What do we do with that information? And then we look at the responsive capacity of the mind, like how we're responding with the information that we're bringing in. And that may seem a little esoteric and or complex. I can drill it down to three basic levels. It's awareness, it's wisdom, it's compassion. And once we are able to elevate the tools of our own mind by elevating our awareness, what we perceive outside of ourselves, when I'm engaging with you, Howard, and I'm reading your facial expressions and we're in
Right.
this conversation, that, but also awareness of my own internal dialogue. You know, what are the things that I'm thinking or planning or what's happening inside my own mind in this conversation? When I'm elevating that, that's a tool that I can use for good. And
No
the same
question.
thing with wisdom. Am I asking myself the right question, myself the right questions? Am I discerning effectively what's happening around me? Am I using my critical thinking capacity before I go into responsiveness? And the responsiveness is really, am I doing things with heart, which is something that only humans, still the AI can mimic heart, but it doesn't have heart. And so it's that ability to bring heart to everything I'm doing as well. So those are kind of like the three tools that
Yeah,
we like to
no,
use.
that's great. And, one of the things that is so underestimated is simply out of energy saving needs. A lot of our thinking is very, very simplistic and binary, and unfortunately, the world right now is not helping people see beyond that. You just look at the news and social media, and it's either this or it's that. No, it's way more complicated, way more
More nuanced.
complicated than that. No, it's, that's very concerning to me because people are just being exposed to really very, very, very basic stuff that is not challenging them at all. We need to be challenged all the time. If we don't have that capacity ourselves to say, well, let's see if there's another way of thinking about this. We just get fixed into this by the echo chamber around
You got it.
us, right? That's scary. That's scary. And also, I know you're a lot into AI, and so am I. And you said something that I think was very appropriate. You talked about the AI doing things. So, yeah, AI is a great doer of things. You can tell it, this is what you have to do, and it'll do it. That's great. But where's the being in AI? Okay. Where's the being in AI? And so, what's interesting to me is okay, let's simple one automatic checkouts at grocery stores or any store, automatic checkout. How much do people miss the interaction with a real person checking them out that they may have seen, every week for years? How much do they miss that? Yeah, you can AI can check you out very conveniently. That's great. But where's the human element in that that we don't think of? We just say, well, that's a process. You have to pay for your stuff. But is AI going to ultimately help us see the importance of what seems like unnecessary social interaction? Right?
Well, if I can, if I may, I mean,
Please.
one of the things that so we just have come out with a book called More Human, More Human in the Age of AI. And when we were first, and again, when this is a book that we published in part with our longstanding partnership with Harvard Business Review and Harvard Business Press, they came to us and they asked us to write the book on AI. We are actually under contract
Wow.
for a completely different book, on more on the topic of selfless leadership. And they said, "Have you heard of this thing called AI?" This is a couple of years ago now. And we were like, "Yes." And then they said, "Well, we think you should write a book about it." And we went, "Whoa, wait a minute. That's not our wheelhouse.
Right.
Our wheelhouse is in the potential of the mind."
Right.
And they said, "But that's why we think you'd be so good at it. We'd like you to look at it from that lens." And so what's interesting about what you just said, Howard, is We had a lot of those same concerns as what you just named. And in fact, three of the biggest risks that we highlight from the book that it's part of our research are we're going to dig down more into echo chambers. We're going to lose our critical thinking capability because we're just defaulting to what the AI is telling us is the truth without discerning whether it is or isn't. And AI still hallucinates, even though it's getting better and better. And we're going to be more disconnected because if I can ask my silly questions of a machine rather than feeling a bit embarrassed to ask you, for example, then I'm more likely to go to the machine than actually go to the human. But what we also know, just to kind of flip it, so it's not all doom and gloom, is that there's incredible potential with AI as well. And if I can just put your example of the cash machine at the grocery store into an organizational setting, if we use AI, which we should, to help us with efficiencies, to help us save time, we don't have to have the supercharged knowledge anymore because the AI will be more knowledgeable than any human being on earth right now. Then the question is, what do you do with that saved time? Do you take that saved time and just go back into the inbox? Please, no. Don't do that. But of course, humans are always looking to fill a vacuum. But the organizations who are doing this best are the organizations who are saying, we want you to have more human connection, not less. And let the AI do the things that free you up to be able to have more diverse perspectives, not be in the echo chamber, to be a sparring partner to kind of test your thinking and think about things in new and different ways, and then to go back to the human people that you're actually working with as well. And connecting with them.
So, AI is fantastic at doing, but we can't neglect the being, and only humans can do that,
There you go. There you go. And that's the invitation is if AI can do the doing part, then let's get back to the being part. And that's the hope that I have of the miracle that can occur if we're taking the best of AI plus human and getting the best of both.
Yes, I agree. Very well articulated. That was in four. Where was that in magazine? Was it in? You wrote your
Our
book, but
a book,
Harvard.
Harvard Business Review.
And so again, what's the book called for our listeners?
Our book is More Human: How Are the Power of AI Can Transform the Way You Lead. It has come out in March 2025, so it should be
Oh,
freely
great.
available.
Okay.
We do also publish frequently on Harvard Business Review and in Forbes and other places, so you can find out more.
That's amazing. And if people want to find out more about potential project, what do they do? There must be a website, I'm sure.
Yes, you can come to our website, which is potentialproject.com, just one word. We also publish a lot of our thought leadership on our LinkedIn page. And of course, I have my own personal LinkedIn page as well if anybody wants to contact me individually.
Yeah, no, that's great. So we have a couple more minutes. Been very great conversation. Great conversation. Thank you so much. Exactly, what we need to look at an organizational point of view for them to achieve things. And I think it's really important. I mean, organizations are made up of so many different people from so many different, cultures and but this message is again really important. And I do think it does, it's really at that intersection of doing and being, isn't it? Right?
It
Just as
absolutely
an
is.
individual, if you want to do great things, you've got to be in a certain being mindset. And that's, I'm sure, true of organizations too.
What I would say is, it's hard to be more human without being. That's the essence of being more human. And so I would say, we've had very interesting times in the last 5 years globally and all across many different factors that translates to how people show up at work. And if we have learned nothing from everything that the world has been through, hopefully we've learned about the power of human connection and the power of humanness, even when we're leveraging the best of machine. And to your point earlier, let the machines do the doing. It's what they have been built for. And let's double down on the being.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And so this actually is a great time to focus on that because we do have machines that can do all sorts of amazing things and can save a lot of time and effort. And that's great that we've got them. Okay, so where does that leave us? It leaves us focusing on the important thing, which is the being, you know? And you know, again, you can look at that at a microscopic small level, or 30,000 foot view level, like, hey, when you die, you want to know that you've helped people and had a meaningful life and had good relationships. But that's an interesting perspective that AI gives us that opportunity, gives us that time to focus on a really important thing. It can get on with putting stuff together and making amazing things. Well, we can develop our kindness and our concern, our compassion for each other. And I was thinking earlier when you talked about the guy who went home and reacted to his son differently. That's a magical moment because potentially that has massive, massive compounded effects, you know, years into the future. I mean, not just this Tuesday when he, had that conversation, but how it changes a relationship with his son, how that changes his son, how that makes his son a great dad, you know, and down we go, just keep going. It's one of the things that people underestimate is compounding. And you know, most people talk about that in terms of numbers, compounding. That people aren't very good at that, but they're also not very good at understanding that small things can have a major difference.
And they can have not only the compounding benefits that you have mentioned that can go generationally even, but it's a lot of unseen things as well, because we don't know how it may have, as you said, shifted not only the father's behavior, but the son's behavior and the impact of the son on his peers and the trajectory of how he sees himself into the future and the contributions that he makes in the world. So it's unseen things is where those miracles can really occur.
There you go. That's great. Marissa, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much. I'll have to have you back again. But thank you again. It's been very, very insightful conversation. I really appreciate it. And thank you for being here.
I've loved it, Howard, and I'd love to be back again. Thank you so much for what you do.
You're so welcome. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Miracle Within You. Join me next time when I continue to explore the power of the mind-body and how it can be employed to enhance health and healing.